Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. We're going to be talking about a subject matter today with a young man who has walked a road of experience I doubt that very many will ever have an opportunity to do, and I don't know they'd ever want to. My guest today is Captain Eric Navarro, and he is a man that decided to be brave and talk about his experiences in Iraq, and it's titled, God Willing, My Wild Ride with the New Iraqi Army. I want to welcome to the show Captain Eric Navarro. Eric, welcome.
Thank you.
It's a delight having you as a guest. You were a Marine. Are you still in service at this time?
Yes, I am. I'm still in the reserves. I just recently came back from a second tour in this past April. So.
All right, because I know that you were, at the time that this book was published or being published, you were looking at going back for a second tour, and you were planning, after you finished your second tour, to be going back to business school. Are you able to do that at this time?
I am currently in business school right now.
In business school right now. I want to ask you a question.
Sure.
Why did you decide to talk about a subject that so many people consider taboo?
Exactly because of that, because I feel that it should not be taboo. I think the subject of the Iraqi Army provides a great example of what has been wrong with our approach, starting from after the fall of Saddam. When we're trying to build up the Iraqi society, as well as I believe that in the larger global war on terror, our political correctness has hamstrung us, and it's prevented us from actually speaking about the root causes of our war on terror.
I typically do not do anything on politics, and this isn't about politics per se. This, when I went through your book, I was so impressed with your clarity.
Well, thank you.
As a Marine, I feel like you have done a tremendous service to your fellow soldiers, because I think that too often the stories of soldiers out in the field are not spoken of, they are not heard. So I most sincerely want to compliment you on having the courage to do this, because I'm sure that there are many people that feel that perhaps you violated a code of some type, and you have not. Because the points you bring out in your book are points that I think that, my goodness, they apply in business.
Yes.
Just as much. I mean, we talk about business all the time. This is something that, yes, it has the military involvement, but we are taking a positioning of authority. We're saying, this is what should happen, and someone says, gee whiz, go out and do it, and there were a group of you that went over, and you're dropped off, and you find out, sorry, it's not anything at all like we've been told in the books.
Right. As an officer, you're trained to fix problems, to identify them, point them out, and then come up with solutions to those problems. Well, that's what I felt I was doing with this book, was I saw problems, that larger problems for our involvement with the Iraqi culture, and I felt like I had to point them out. Now, as far as business, picture the job of an advisor almost like an embedded management consultant, because that's what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were watching how their business was being conducted, identifying the flaws, and then offering solutions, and then leading them through those possible solutions.
At the very beginning of your book, you mention two words, Insha'Allah.
Yes.
And in your personal opinion, they lie, you felt, at the beginning of your book, you said, they lie at the heart of the problem. Why did you feel that way?
Inshallah means God willing or if God wills it. It was a saying that the Iraqis used all the time to explain everything that happened in their lives. So they literally believed that everything that happened in their lives was a direct result of God's will. So it had drastic effects on our mission, and I thought it was the overarching concept that explained some of the difficulties the Iraqis had. For example, when we were doing marksmanship training, if the Iraqi soldier missed the target with his shooting, it wasn't because, in his mind, he didn't practice properly. He believed that it was God's will, Allah's will, that his bullets not actually hit the target. So when you're living in a society like that, there is no sense of personal responsibility, which I think partially explains why that society broke down the way it did.
There are so many points like this that you bring out, but you bring out points not just on the Iraqi side, but also on the American side. And we'll get into that, but I want to bring up a couple of things that you mentioned in your book. Again, this is right up in the front.
Sure.
One, culturally, if one has not been in that environment, and you have not been willing to learn about that culture, and actually this would pertain to any culture in the world, you make assumptions, people think, well, gee whiz, this is all you do. But you went the extra step. You were willing, within a very short period of time, to try to find out about the culture because you felt like you were in, on one hand, the dead zone, and at the same time, you felt like you were in another dimension of woo-woo special.
Sure. I mean, on a personal level, you're trying to connect with those Iraqis because that is your job. You're trying to influence their behavior in a positive way. I'm trying, as an embedded advisor, I'm trying to get them to change their habits, to become more professional in their military habits, even in their personal habits. And I go into that in the book with their personal hygiene and eating habits and bathroom habits and all that. Because you're trying to influence them to become, I guess, for lack of a better word, more modern. That's what I saw in them, was they were less modern than I ever expected. I just think that it facilitated, that was the best way to facilitate a useful exchange between us. And they responded. They saw that I cared enough to try and learn about them and their culture, and they respected me even more so for that. And then they would listen to my lessons and try to incorporate them and change and get better as a result.
You bring out a point about a herd mentality, and those are my two words.
Sure.
Where when you initially were there, that someone would all of a sudden decide to fire a gun, and you had to figure out what was going on. And one, you didn't speak the language.
Right.
Two, you did not have qualified interpreters to work with you, which is always a tremendous disadvantage. And three, to be able to reach the mind, to be able to reach the thinking process because of the cultural patternings of, gee whiz, we don't have to be responsible. Then you had, and the men that worked with you, had to take the positioning of really being the leaders. And what I found so interesting is that if someone yelled at them, you know, here in the U.S., when you're in boot camp,
right,
you may have a sergeant rip you on one side and down the other, and you just feel like you have just been ripped raw.
Yep.
That somebody could do that there, and they just look at them and say, that's nice.
Right.
You know, they couldn't comprehend. It wasn't in their experience. It wasn't in their mind. You did quite a bit, along with some other associates in the military, to be able to get through to a different level of thinking, but that wasn't easy.
No, it wasn't, and it took hard lessons. We were told even before that Arabs and Iraqis, they don't like to be embarrassed in front of their fellow soldiers, or especially the officers. So you couldn't really berate them in public. You tried not to, unless it was really life or death. So the best way to do that was to perhaps have dinner with them. And happened to slip in a little comment about something that you want them to change. And don't press it. Just, again, allow it to sit in the room, and they learn. They want your approval, so they'll start changing their behaviors. But again, this is almost like diplomacy. It was trying to influence them without directly telling them what to do. Now, when there was bullets flying or rockets coming in, you had to take charge, and that's kind of what we were there for. We were the backbone in case they went soft. And a lot of times they did go soft. A lot of them tried to run away. Others just shot at nothing in particular for just because they were scared. You know, no real sound military response to, say, enemy contact. And that's what we were there for.
And the irony is that so many times weapons were put in the hands of someone, and they might, you know, look down the barrel and say, gee whiz, what's this, and have their finger on the trigger at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, you've had so many experiences, and there is a specific chapter where it was like you were describing how it was very much like being a parent.
Yeah.
You had these children. Now, these are adult men.
Right.
Adult men. But they don't have a clue. I mean, their whole environment had been one of servitude.
Right.
An old-fashioned word is serfdom on another level.
Sure.
And you had this, and my goodness, what do you do to shift that thinking?
Sometimes you actually have to accept the fact that you are the father figure or even the mother figure. You're taking care of them, and you're also trying to discipline them at the same time. And it's strange for us Americans who want to think that every person in the world is the same or equal to us. It's just not the case. There are other societies that are far less developed than us. There are other peoples whose mental capacity seems to be less developed than ours. These are people that could not, the basic soldiers, most of them could not read or write Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So if you think about it, that, when they're praying to the Quran, they're actually just looking at the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they're easily influenced, for example, by the imams telling them what is actually being said. Well, that kind of worked to our advantage as well, where we could twist, you know, we could kind of direct their actions as long as they saw it was in their interest to follow our directions. So that's the best I could put it.
You have a statement in your book, and I'm going to quote it directly. And it's more questions than statements. How could an entire country, an entire people, live their lives believing that free will does not exist?
Right.
How could they walk down the street thinking that whatever happened to them was the will of God and not a result of their own choices and actions? How could a country run on fate and fate alone? Those are powerful questions. We have people in the United States asking the same questions. We have people in Europe, Africa. How do you address that?
I have to tell you, I don't have the answer. I think it's important, and I think the point of the book is to actually bring up those questions in a public atmosphere, because we are taught by political correctness not to ever say these questions or ever ask these questions of people. You're never supposed to talk about politics and religion in circles, right? Well, unfortunately, that's who we are, and if there's a fundamental flaw in that part of us, then that's going to have drastic effects on our actions. I can't help but think that the idea that you believe that God or Allah is telling you to do something doesn't then absolve you of any responsibility for your actions, which is exactly what happened on September 11th with the hijackers. They believe that God was telling them to fly those planes into those buildings. So therefore, they don't have any responsibility to be humane to their fellow human beings. It's God's will. Who are they to question God's will?
What a convenient excuse.
Exactly.
And again, it's a question that needs to be asked on more than one level. And again, it's something, you're bringing stuff out in your book, and I want to, for those of you listening, his book is titled God Willing, My Wild Ride with the New Iraqi Army. And you have photos in here that I think are just very, very good. You realized, to your great frustration, a lot of the habits that these people had were so ingrained, they were hardwired into them.
Yep.
You realized that they honestly could not comprehend much of what was expected. Because their whole world, their whole life, when you think that they were illiterate, when you think that they have nothing else to compare anything with. They are not unlike any other cultural group to be made aware of something that's totally out of their understanding, expectation, experience. That can be quite a trauma for someone in another culture.
Absolutely, and I felt for them because if you think about it, they were raised in a under Saddam their whole lives. So that's the only thing they knew. So that's why I talk about actually our goal as Americans trying to develop this country into a full westernized democracy, we should be almost focusing on their children and their children's children because you're going to get them before they have these habits fully ingrained into their minds. They're going to grow up in a world where they're not... there's not ethnic cleansing. There's not Shiites being oppressed. There's not a Saddam death squads going around. So they'll understand freedom and free will. So we need to do. I mean, this leads me to. I'm sure you're going to ask this later, but we should be there for a very long time. That's one of the conclusions of the book. Is if the mission is to develop a westernized democracy that's a full ally of ours in the country of Iraq. We have to stay there, like, generations.
Because this is not something as you... I think your statement about teaching the children is very important. And that's one thing in my observation of history, no matter where you go, is that you have to observe. If you study history of any culture, let's take our own country.
Sure.
Let's take the Continental Army under George Washington.
Yep.
They were pathetic.
Yes.
If we were to put that very same scenario in our world today, Americans would have been considered terrorists. Now, a lot of people hearing this would just go, Donna, what are you talking about? But I'm serious when I say this. They were fighting with whatever they had available. They were trying to stand their ground. They were totally undisciplined. And it was a German that came over, believed in what Washington was doing, and trained the Continental Army.
Yep.
So you have the exact parallel. You have a parallel here, and again, you can go into different parts of the world and you can find the same one. You ask a question in your book, who would come up with a plan? Were those of you sent over just pawns?
Yes. Well, when you're down on the ground, you start the orders of your hire have drastic effects on your life and your mission. And there were just too many inconsistencies with what we were seeing, let's say, on TV with the President or Secretary Defense Rumsfeld saying this was the most important mission, was to develop, train the Iraqis so that we could withdraw. That was what he said. As they stand up, we will stand down. Well, at that same time, there was 10 of us to 500 of them, and we were originally given no official interpreters. I rode into downtown Fallujah in an unarmored Nissan pickup truck. Now, does that sound like a well-organized, well-thought-out plan? No. It definitely does not sound like that's the main mission of our troops. And so that disconnect is part of why, you know, my criticism as far as our efforts. And it contributed to how long it has taken to develop both the Iraqi military and see the effects of the surge, for example. I think we were very slow on the learning curve here. We finally got it right in the last few years. And it also happened to coincide with General Petraeus becoming commander of all forces in Iraq. I actually met him. He came to visit us during the events of this book. And there was an interesting encounter where there was no promotion system set up for Iraqi soldiers. So we could not reward any of the soldiers that actually tried hard and were doing well. And that had very bad effects on the morale. So we tried through our chain of command to get this changed. Nothing happened. Well, when General Petraeus heard about it, he spoke to my boss, Major, I call him Major Lawson in the book. He gave the Major his personal email address in Baghdad and said, email me anything you actually need and I will get it done right away. Well, my boss emailed him about the promotion and it was changed within a month.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of gives you the idea of both. General Petraeus' intelligence, recognizing that that was a critical shortfall, and the commitment to change things that were not right. So as soon as he came in charge, he changed the strategy, and you see that leadership is very important to the results of these missions, which incidentally is what happens with the Iraqis. When they had poor leadership, which was the norm over there, they had bad results. When we could identify good Iraqi officers, they had good results. It was kind of a simple equation there.
Yes, and that's standard anywhere, whether it's in a corporation,
right,
whether it's in the military, whether it's in a family. If you have the good leadership, if you have the example, and that is something that you found that with the Iraqis, that when you broke bread with them, when you sat in their homes, when they saw that you were concerned about them as a people, for all of the distortion that existed because of the very world that they have evolved through for centuries, this isn't just in the last 20 years. It goes back thousands of years on many levels. When you have that, then that's valuable.
It was invaluable. I would have dinners with them, and a lot of times we would avoid talking about work. You know, ask them about their families or their hopes, their dreams, stuff like that. Just allow them to give voice to what they're thinking. Show them that you care about them. That would go a long way. And then on top of that, getting, as far as the military side, finding intelligent officers that cared about their men. And then I would show them, by example, how you're supposed to do it. So we had sergeants or, you know, staff sergeants underneath us, and they would see how I interacted with them, which was in a respectful manner where I was setting the example as an officer, and I did the work just like my men did, which was a big thing because in the old system, the officers, it was a caste system where they would just order their soldiers around and expect them to just do things. Well, that's not how the modern military works. You have to set the example for your men and show them that you're not above them.
I agree. I think that is an example of leadership.
Yes.
What is your commitment? What is your discipline? The old saying is that who's ever at the top permeates the entire organization. That, I think, is a fact, and I've seen it too many times, and you yourself have seen it as a young man being in charge, being an officer in the military. I was also appreciative of the fact that you talked about the American side.
Yep.
And the fact that many times, and it was a while before this happened, many times soldiers were sent over, no cultural training, nothing, to all they could think of is this is the enemy. They're soldiers.
Yes, we had a lot of difficulties, actually. We called ourselves the Drifters, that was our call sign, because we drifted in between the two worlds. We were obviously Americans with Iraqis, so we were kind of tainted in the eyes of the other combat troops, American combat troops. So whenever we tried to get support from them, a lot of times they gave us the stiff arm. They did not want to help us. This is, you got to remember, right during the heart of the rise of the insurgency, Fallujah had been raging, the Battle of Fallujah. So really, in the minds of most American troops there, all Iraqis were potentially insurgents.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to combat that type of mentality. And it proved difficult. I mean, we just had to continue to beg, borrow, and steal whatever materials, whatever support we needed. And so if you picture us 10 Marines in between both the Iraqis with their insanity and then the obstinance of the American side, I mean, it was a very difficult job.
As an officer, you are now going to college. You are determined to advance your own education. What would you want to say to the American people to make them aware that in dealing with illiteracy, in dealing with culture, in dealing with belief systems where people have been suppressed for so long, to be able to come out of that, it's a challenge, and the younger generation needs it. What do we need to be aware of? Because this isn't something where, like you said, if we step out, then it's really a challenge. We're leaving something that's in a muddled mess. What do you, as a soldier, feel that we should be aware of?
We need to be aware that because of the ingrained cultural idiosyncrasies of Iraq, that there is no easy, quick fix, and that it's going to take very long to accomplish the goal that we have set out for, of developing them into a full modern democracy that is our ally in the heart of the Middle East. So this idea that we're, you know, now discussing, because it's election season, of when we're going to withdraw and all that, I mean, in my estimation, it is nonsense. It is not credible based on the facts on the ground. Yes, we have made enormous progress in the last year to two, but that will all go away if we leave. Just ask yourself, when did we leave Germany, Japan, and Korea? The fact is, we haven't left, ever.
Mm-hmm.
We're still there. We still have bases there. And all three of those countries developed into strong democracies, thriving economies, and solid allies of ours. Well, that's exactly the model that we should be using for Iraq. I mean, if we leave, what do you think is going to happen in that country? Well, the Sunnis, Shiites, and Kurds are all going to fight each other. Iran is going to try to influence the Shiite part. If Iran invades, what's going to happen then? What do you think Saudi Arabia is going to do, who is a Sunni country? They're going to get involved. Don't forget Syria. Don't forget Turkey and the Kurds in the north have been going at it. So if we were not there, that country would basically implode. So,
how has this affected you as an individual? What are the changes that you have seen for yourself? And what do you feel the gift has been that you can bring to other people?
I don't know if I'd call it a gift, but I mean, it basically explained or showed to me the danger of believing in one sort of belief system. When you say, for example, in a religious sense, when you believe that your life is controlled by God, who determines what God is trying to tell you? I don't know that fact. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know how anyone can know what God wants. So on a religious sense, I just question people that claim to be speaking in the name of God. On a personal level, it just taught me that people, if you deal with them on a personal level, get to know them, they will respond. When you try to dehumanize them, obviously bad things end up happening. We should have gone in there with this mindset. Yes, they're an enemy there, but some of our tactics made things worse. I go into it where we just roll into a town. We search everyone's houses. We wake them up in the middle of the, before dawn. We accuse them of, some of them being insurgents, and then we leave. Well, what exactly does that do? Not only does it make them angry, but we're not even remaining there to protect the ones that want to help us. It made no sense. So I learned that some of our tactics needed refinement, let's put it that way. And you can't always assume that your leadership does understand everything that's going on the ground. Sometimes you have a better vantage point, and you should not be afraid to point that out to higher-ups.
And that's something you actually did, and you were sort of shaken in the knees when you did it a few times, but then afterwards you said, what do I have to lose?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's the same reason why I joined the Marines. I felt like I needed to do something for my country, for others. Very few people actually nowadays look out for other people. That's one thing that I lament about our country. The sense of purpose outside of our own lives is gone, or it's not important anymore. I felt like I needed to give back to my country, to my fellow Americans. Once that was my foundation, I understood that even if I was going to get in trouble, it was the right thing to do if I spoke out, if I saw something wrong.
Captain Eric Navarro has been my guest today. I strongly encourage you to consider getting his book, God Willing, My Wild Ride with the New Iraqi Army. It is a point of view that not many people have the courage to write about, much less be willing to speak about, and I'm very pleased that he was able to be my guest today. I wish you the best. Captain Navarro, and I know you will have a successful life, and may the lessons and experiences that you've gotten, may they carry over to serve other people in the way that you so earnestly desire.
Well, thank
I know
you
your website
me.
Isn't up yet, but let us know when it is.
Oh, it'll be probably CaptainEricNavarro.com or GodWilling.com. It's in production right now.
So. Oh, great. So if you want to see his website, it's Captain Eric Navarro, N-A-V-A-R-R-O. It's in progress, and it'll be up shortly. Otherwise, you could look at GodWilling.com. Either way, you'll be able to get more insight and information about this man who has taken a stand. And to all of those that are serving our country, I am so glad that there was one that was able to put into print what so many of them feel. Thank you again, Captain Navarro, for your time and for your wonderful book.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't you go anywhere. We've got more good things to share. We're going to be right back.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna, and telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, here are the telephone numbers to call in to. The telephone numbers are 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. Now, if you're a first-time listener, all you need to do is give me your first name or initial, and then let me tell you what I perceive about you. That's right. I am an intuitive, and I'm delighted to share my mental skills with you as an individual. So give me a call, 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756, and also 530-876-3222. I want to let you know who's going to be on the air with me tomorrow. We're going to be talking with Dr. Debbie Yawn and her husband, Winston Churchill. Yes, that is actually his name. I'm not making it up. We are going to be talking about winning techniques for college, and also her husband, whose name is Winston Churchill, found out that he actually was related and is related to the family. So we've got some fun things we're going to be sharing with you tomorrow. Also, on Wednesday, we're going to be talking with Stanton Friedman. So many of you are familiar with this man. He's been on my show before. We're going to be talking about flying saucers and science. The two actually can go together quite nicely. Then on Thursday, we're going to be talking with Janet Davis, and we're going to be finding out about Tinkerbell. Yes, that character that we so dearly love in the Disney cartoons was actually a real person. She also was a circus queen. So we're going to be finding out about Toni Klein, the woman who was the image of that popular character. And then on Friday, we're going to be talking with Kat James, the truth about beauty from the inside out. And you're not going to want to miss it. So we have a dynamic week, and I want you to just tell your friends. And remember always, if you miss a show, you can listen to it later on at your leisure. That's right. How you do that? You go to the archives. And there, right there in the archives, we have all the programming available for you. Well, I have a nice little poem in front of me by Kate Beasley. And she said, "The sidewalk's too hot for barefooted fun. The sun's much too fierce to frolic and run. But breezes are blowing where gulls glide and soar. The water's just right. Let's head to shore." Ah, yes, the wonderful feeling of summer. So if you're living in a part of the country where you can get away to the beach and just relax and have fun, that's great. But maybe the next best thing would be having a party in your own backyard. Some of you live in areas of the country where there isn't a beach handy. Well, why not create a little bit of magic? A magic that Hawaii brings to mind. When you think of Hawaii, automatically there's a picture of the palms swaying and the beautiful ocean and the sandy beaches. Well, why not create a luau in your own backyard? Yes, you can do it, and it's so much fun. I have to chuckle at one of our local banks. Every once in a while, they have a Hawaiian day, and people just love it. Why? Because they're able to wear bright colors and the flowers, and it just perks everything up. We even have a grocery store in the area that during the winter, they'll have their luau days, and they've got all kinds of bright and colorful items that are out symbolizing the Hawaiian feel, which is full of sunshine and full of color. Well, you can do all kinds of things. If you don't have the budget to fly off to the islands, well, you can create it. Yes, in your own backyard. You can have the music. You can put up some tiki torches. You can have a buffet and invite your guests to contribute to the Hawaiian, like the Hawaiian style. You know, what kind of foods that you can bring in. Of course, it has to have a tropical twist. There's the teriyaki sauce that you can do. You can use soy sauce, pineapple juice. You've got all kinds of things that you can bring together. There's the limbo game. Of course, I often associate that more with the Caribbean than I do with the Hawaiian feel, but hey, anything goes. They're both places where the sun shines and people love to relax and play. And of course, there's an old recipe for Hawaiian punch that is always a favorite with the youngsters, especially 3 cans of frozen fruit punch concentrate, 1 can of pineapple juice, a can cream of coconut, and also 2 bottles of ginger ale and lots of ice cubes. And flowers galore. You can have orchids. You can do all kinds of things. But it's a lot of fun. Just have a good time. Remember, wherever you are, you can create that wonderful environment. And it's infectious. People love to have a good time. And when you have guests, if you're going to have a whole bunch of them, and they know what your theme is going to be in advance, if you have a theme with a party, which is always fun, they can come up with some wild and woolly ideas that are just a blast, not just for the adults, but for the kids as well. So you can have a great time during these summer months. And you don't have to spend a whole bunch of money. I mean, so many of us are so concerned about traveling and about costs. Are we going to be able to afford it? What do we do with gasoline and so on and so forth? Well, remember, there's a lot of things in your own backyard that you can enjoy, that you can have fun with. And that's what you need to keep in mind. There's always possibilities. And one thing we Americans are known for is, well, it's our ingenuity. We're willing to take chances. We're willing to stick our necks out. We're willing to create. And that can be a lot of fun, especially when you have other people involved. Donna Sebo here. Give me a call if you'd like to chat. Telephone numbers if you'd like an intuitive reading. 877-876-5227. The line is open right now. 888-815-9756. Premonitions. Dreams. Day visions. These are things that happen to people. Fortunately, in today's world, we're more open and aware, and we are able to talk freely. So many years that I was involved in this work, you just were very thoughtful about who you discussed any of your quote-unquote psychic experiences with. Well, it has been that attitude for a good deal of time, and I'm so glad that we've evolved to the point that we have. Because with good communication, we can take away a lot of the fear, the mystery, and the superstition that often goes with what we are ignorant about. Well, let me tell you a story that occurred in the 1880s to just show you this is nothing new. Nope, it isn't. Now, there was a lord. He was a British ambassador in Paris. His name was Lord Dufferin. He happened to be vacationing at a country home of a very dear friend while he was visiting Ireland. One night, he awakened so suddenly out of a very sound sleep, and he was awakened with this feeling that he had to be alert. He couldn't explain it, so what he did, he got out of bed. It was very unsettling, and he walked over to the window that was in his bedroom, and as he looked out on the grounds below him, he noticed the moon was shining, and in the moon's glow on the ground, there was a figure that was hunched over that seemed to be staggering under what looked like a coffin. One person carrying a coffin-like object. Well, he could hardly help himself. He put on his robe, went out of the bedroom, goes downstairs, goes out the front door, and looks at the man, calls to him, and says, "What in the world are you doing? What are you carrying?" The man lifted his head from beneath his burden, and Lord Dufferin saw a wizened, ugly face, so ugly that it repelled him. He stepped back. He asked the man again where he was taking the coffin, and right in front of his eyes, the figure disappeared. Well, this, you can imagine, was very unnerving, and he didn't get much sleep. He was at a total loss, so he talked to his host. His host said, "I have no explanation for this. We don't know of anybody that's anything like what you've described." Well, that wasn't the end of the story. It was a few years later, in the 1890s, Lord Dufferin was back in Paris. He was going to be a part of an international diplomatic reception at a grand hotel. Now, we're going to take a break. Oh, I know you're going to have to wait to hear the rest of the story. When we come back after the break, you'll be able to hear it. Donna Sebo here. Don't forget, phone lines are open. If you'd like to chat with me today, here are the telephone numbers to call. 877-876-5227. 888-815-9756 or 530-876-3222. Yes, I'll finish the story when we come back. Don't go away.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. And don't forget, my newsletter is up on my site. If you're not on my newsletter list to receive it for free, then just go right into my website, tap that button on the left that says newsletter, and you'll be able to go right to the latest edition and be able to read it at your leisure and even make a copy of it if you so desire. Let's get back to Lord Dufferin. Remember, he was going to, and this is in the 1890s, to a international diplomatic reception at the Grand Hotel. His private secretary was with him, and they were going to enter an elevator in the hotel. But Dufferin just stepped back all of a sudden. No way was he going to get on the elevator. Why? The elevator operator was the same person he had seen on the lawn many years before of his friend's home. Now, the elevator went up without Lord Dufferin and his secretary. The ambassador went to the reception desk to ask who this man was in the elevator. As the elevator reached the fifth floor, the cable snapped, and with a resounding crash, it plunged to the bottom of the shaft, killing all of the occupants within it. Now, this accident was reported in the newspapers and also is on record with the British Society for Psychical Research. However, there is another part of the story. The ambassador was unable to discover the identity of the elevator operator who ended up being the person that saved his life. Neither the management of the hotel nor the accident investigators could find any record of the man's name or his background. Spooky. That's the way it's supposed to be. It's a true story. Things like this happen. And someone may say, oh, Donna, that's one in a gazillion. Perhaps. But, you know, one of the reasons that you have the intuitive process operating within you is it is your safety check. It's part of your mechanism for survival. And the more that you pay attention to it, however it works within you, the better things are going to flow in your life. You'll know when you're with the right people saying the right thing in the right place. There will be a feel, an awareness. It is your responsibility as an individual to be able to pay attention to that. And I'll tell you, as long as I've been involved in this work, for as many years as I've been involved in the study and learning of the mind, I find that there are so many experiences that people have. One day I probably should write a book about the stories that people tell me, because there are so many unique experiences. And they're valuable experiences because they show us that we are all connected on a level that we can't even comprehend. But science is beginning to recognize, and this is with the quantum physics, that there are multiple things going on that we just have no clue about. You know, earlier when I was talking with Captain Navarro, is talking about a culture that he is very much experienced with. When you have a culture of people that have never seen or really been aware of anything different, there is that learning curve, and we take so much for granted in the Western world. We just seem to think, well, it's automatic, but it isn't. It's taken us some time to get where we are. It's taken us a lot of time to be able to cultivate an understanding. There was, for a long time, few people that had it, but it really was not encouraged that the average individual learn how to read and how to write. It wasn't encouraged for the average individual to become knowledgeable in any way, shape, or form other than what certain persons delegated the right for you to be able to do. Well, that's, I think, been the history of mankind. And again, I think history is a wonderful, wonderful thing to get involved with because it allows you to see and it allows you to be aware that you have to constantly be willing to learn. Because that's the only way we're going to be able to pass things that are of value on, is through education, through understanding. Look at the Dark Ages in Europe. Books burned, things destroyed, people encouraged to just be blotto in the brain department. It can happen at any time, any place, anywhere. So we have to do due diligence. We have to be aware of ourselves and the investment in ourselves to go on, to become educated, and to become knowledgeable, to be able to ask questions. Does it make sense? If it doesn't make sense, figure out why. Talk to people maybe that are more knowledgeable than you, and maybe you'll find they're not more knowledgeable than you. Maybe you've come up with an idea or a concept that is so out of the box, may take them 15, 20 years to catch up. This is in all levels of life. So don't be afraid to expand your mind, to expand your capabilities of understanding things. We all have strengths, we all have weaknesses, and it's so important to realize you never are too old to learn something new. Not ever. This old adage, an old dog can't learn new tricks, is a bunch of baloney. They have found, for example, with mature people, when they are able to be in environments where they are educating themselves more and more, it's amazing what they're able to accomplish. They may not be able to do wheelies and cartwheels physically, but that doesn't mean they're dead in the brain department. Unless there's some kind of a physical illness, you never stop learning. There's always the opportunity to expand. And I've done enough interviews on this show with people of very mature years who even in their 90s are still out there. They're the radicals. They're the ones that say, nope, I've got a lot more to learn, and there's a heck of a lot out there in this world that I really get excited about, and I really want to be a part of what the changes are, and I want to be instrumental in making them happen. So it's something. Don't ever give up on yourself. Never too late. Always enjoy the learning process. By golly, if you're hot and if you're cooking in certain parts of the country, which I know there are some of you that are, hey, here are some suggestions to keep you cool, and you've probably heard about them. One, keep your head cool. You know, 50% of your body heat is stored in the head. And if you have something that cools you, like maybe putting some ice in front of a fan and letting the air grow, you know, blow over it, or maybe just getting some of these little packs that you can put in the freezer and maybe put them either on your neck or around your head, maybe wrap them in a towel so it doesn't, you're not going to feel like you're freezing to death, freezing a part of your anatomy to death. And just allow that coolness really makes a difference. And here's a tip that somebody shared with me. If you take your pillowcase and put it in a plastic bag in the freezer right before bedtime, if you're in one of those real hot, hot, hot spots, that'll keep you nice and cool. If you have a pet that's overheated, you can rub them down with water, cool water, and maybe even if you have an old-fashioned ice pack, use that just to rub over the body so that they cool down. My goodness, we're almost out of time here. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Freedom is something that we have to earn. It is not just there. We have to earn it, and we also have to be aware that we have to take care of it. We are so privileged here at BBSRadio.com to be able to bring programming to you that is different and that is something that allows you to think and be exposed to what maybe you've never been exposed to before. I'm so pleased to be a part of the team, and I'm so pleased to be able to be here on a daily basis with you. So, hey, tune in tomorrow, same time, same place here, right here, with me, Donna Sebo, on BBSRadio.com, and don't forget those archives. We'll talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.